President Roeg?
Hello, everyone. This is AFSCME Council 25 President Larry Roerig. AFSCME is proud of the work our members and all school employees are doing and all you do in Michigan's public schools, and we are glad that you could join us on this call today. In these uncertain times, I'm so proud that our labor movement is strong and advocating for what our members need, and I am absolutely thrilled that we have a partner in Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer who cares about education and about the working men and women and families of Michigan. She is the shining beacon of hope in this war we are all waging. During today's call, if you have a question you'd like to ask, just press *3 on your phone at any given time, and we'll get you in line to ask it.
Thanks, Larry. This is Paula Herbert, President of the Michigan Education Association. To say these few weeks have been challenging is a massive understatement. None of us have been through a pandemic like this, and we're adjusting and making choices as best we can moving forward. As an educator, I know everyone on this call wants to be back on the job working with their students, and that the uncertainty of what is ahead is unsettling. But first and foremost, we must be committed to public health and safety, slowing down the spread of this disease before it claims even more lives has to be our number one priority. And now I'd like to introduce David Hecker.
Thanks, Paula. This is David Hecker, president of AFT Michigan. I know I speak for Sister Herbert and Brother Roerig in that we're all so proud to be advocates for those we represent during these unprecedented times. And we're equally proud to be standing up for what's best for students, especially those with the greatest needs. There are no perfect answers in this situation, but we're bringing your concerns to those in Lansing who are making the tough choices right now, including our speaker this afternoon, our Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Governor, on behalf of Paula, Larry, and I, and our combined memberships, thank you for taking the input of education employees into account throughout this crisis. We appreciate your tremendous leadership and decisive leadership. I'm now going to turn the call over to you to talk about the actions being taken around public education as this crisis continues. Governor?
Great. Thank you. And I want to thank all of you for the work you've been doing to reach your students. I've always known that educators are superheroes, but what I've seen in the last few weeks is just nothing short of amazing. The incredible, creative, and meaningful ways that teachers across Michigan are reaching out to their students, from using Skype and Zoom to sending letters to dropping off meals for families to just organizing the caravan and driving through neighborhoods to wave to students and reassure them that we'll get through this. I even saw a teacher on Twitter who used Zoom to help her students meditate. You know, your work that you're doing is having an impact on our kids, and I thank you. I know this crisis is taking a toll on everyone, and I know that the toll is real, and it can take a toll on our mental health as well. And I want to encourage you all to take care of yourselves. And I keep yelling at my staff, eat a vegetable, you know, and I do it only half joking because we have to be reminded sometimes. Those of us who are care for others need to remember to care for ourselves by eating a vegetable or getting a little exercise or getting some sleep. It's okay to go out and get fresh air. You just got to stay 6 feet away from anyone else when you do it. But it's really a good thing to do, and engage with professionals if professional help is needed. We're all in this together, and we've got to have one another's backs. Today, I signed an executive order to close school buildings to students for the remainder of the year. This is not a decision that I take lightly, but I'm confident it's the right one to do in the current circumstances in which we find ourselves. Our dedicated educators, our teachers and secretaries and parapros, custodial and cafeteria workers will be paid for the remainder of the school year. All in-person instruction for K-12 students will be suspended and all school buildings will be closed for the remainder of the year for instructional things. This does not mean that our kids stop learning, though, and each district must develop an alternate learning plan for students to continue their education during this time. Plans are going to be different based on district. They're going to be locally driven, and they're going to need to reflect what's the best for the community. Meeting the challenges that are unique to some districts and taking advantage of the resources that are available. This can mean sometimes it might be learning by phone or mail or online, project-based learning, paper packets, telephone lessons, and things like that can be used as a means of alternate mode of delivering instruction. Districts must make sure that their plans are appropriate and accessible for families in their schools. If the plan relies on some online instruction, the district should ensure every student has access to an appropriate device with an ability to connect to the internet. Students and families won't be punished if they're unable to participate in the alternate learning plan. And I know this is hard and there's going to be a lot of questions. What does this look like? How does this work? But I know that we can navigate this, and it's going to have to be driven by the experts on the front line, and that's all of you, and that's our local leadership. As a parent of two high schoolers, I can tell you, even up until a few minutes before I announced the decision, I was getting text messages from the people with whom I live asking me, and my oldest wants to know, am I still going to graduate? My younger wants to know, how am I going to take the SAT? So I know the kind of stress that families are feeling across Michigan. But at this point in time, the most important thing we can do is take the appropriate actions to protect the health of our kids and for the tens of thousands of educators who work in our schools. It's going to ensure more kids and educators can return this fall to a happy and healthy start of the school year, and these actions will protect more families from the spread of COVID-19. It'll help us return to a normal life sooner, and that's why, all of the orders that I've issued have been driven by what's in the best health interests of our people. None of them was easy, but I'm confident that we're taking the right actions, and if we all work together, we're going to get through this okay. So with that, I'm happy to open it up and answer questions.
Great. Thanks, Governor Whitmer. One of the things that I want to remind people is that if you do have a question, press *3 to get into the queue. And Julie, if we're ready.
Thank you, Paula, and thank you so much, Governor. Our first question actually deals with something you just spoke about, but from Sherry Morgan. Sherry, you
Hello?
Are live.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello. Yes, I am the local union president for our local, and I have two questions. Thank you for taking my questions. Teacher evaluations for this year. I am assuming they're going to be canceled as far as reporting that to the state. Is that correct?
I think we might have lost you. Next question is from Diane Sanders. Diane, you're live now.
Oh, hello. Let me get my question back because I had it over here. Oh, I want to know if there's a possibility that the school year will be extended by the during the summertime by the days that we've missed, and also IEPs are frozen at this time. Will they be extended?
So when it comes to decisions around what the school year ends up looking like, we've left that in large part to the ISDs and the local districts so that they can make a determination what's going to be the best way to serve the needs of the kids in the community and in the district. We have, lifted lots of rules that were applicable before in terms of the standardized testing, in terms of evaluations, so that school districts can have maximum flexibility and to come up with a solution that makes sense locally. And so it's going to look different for different districts. We have 900 districts across Michigan, or over 900, and each has unique challenges, whether it's, you know, access to broadband or to devices, and each has, you know, unique strengths. And so we wanted to not mandate what it looks like for everyone, but for the locals to retain control over formulating with their teachers and with the expertise what is going to be in the best interest of the kids. So it will look different for different districts. With regard to the IEPs, we still do have want to live up to all that is anticipated and planned in the IEP, but it is important to recognize that where there are services that are, you know, require hands-on therapy or you know, teaching, that is taken into account and supported when we can safely get back into, you know, that kind of a scenario. But we recognize right now it is not safe to be together, that staying home and keeping our distance is what's really paramount right now with COVID-19 spreading so quickly. And so we've left some of that to the local districts to make the right decision for their students.
Thank you. And for our next question, we've got Kelly Gardner from the Rockford Education Association. Kelly, would you ask your question, please?
Yes. Since school budgets haven't really recovered from the 2008 recession, I'm wondering how they're going to be affected by the lack of sales tax, especially in the 2021 school year.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm acutely aware of how all of these financial pressures are going to impact our ability to make the investments that we need to. So as I write budgets, as I work with the legislature, you know, we are going to be able to make use of some of those dollars that will be coming from the federal government for unique challenges as a result of COVID-19. And I think that we'll be eligible to use some of those dollars in the education sphere. I will say that while the supplemental that they passed and that Donald Trump signed into law looks like, incredible numbers, and they are, the fact of the matter is they tied a lot of strings to them in terms of it can only be used for needs arising out of COVID-19. And so we're going to have to be really mindful about how we prioritize school aid fund dollars, how we prioritize general fund dollars, and how we make use of the best use out of each of those dollars that we'll be bringing in from the federal government. There's no question in my mind, though, that we're going to have some unique challenges and unique needs, and we're going to need to put more resources into our K-12 system, especially as we think about the wraparound kind of supports that kids are going to need. Particularly in the fall when it's safe to resume class in the traditional sense.
Thank you so much. And our next question, we've actually gotten this from a few folks, but I'm going to ask Sherry Tolbert from the Flint area. Could you ask your question, please?
Yes, I think the question was already answered, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it anyway. First of all, I would like to thank the governor for holding this town hall meeting. Telecall meeting, but I wanted to ask specifically for the kids of the city of Flint who've already suffered from a water crisis. How are they going to have access to their internet? Because there's still a lot of children in the city of Flint that do not have access to the internet, so they can continue on with their education.
Right. Well, thank you for the question. I think, it's one of the challenges that we have as a state is we've had disparate treatment of schools historically, and it's part of why each time I've written a budget as governor, I've taken efforts to write it so that it is equitable, so that it takes into account the needs and the lessons from the all the research that we've done in terms of ensuring that kids in higher poverty and kids in distress have got additional wraparound support so that we can truly try to level the playing field through education. I recognize that not every community has universal access to broadband or devices, so that even if they do have broadband, they have the ability to get online and connect. And so that's why we're really wanted to give maximum ability at the local level to make determinations and put together plans for how we're going to meet our kids' needs. Now, in Flint, perhaps, you know, there are going to be a lot of different community leaders that are going to want to help make sure that we're meeting the needs of kids in Flint, just like we've seen in Detroit Public Schools, private partners coming to the table with some additional support in terms of devices. I know that there's been a discussion, at least in Detroit. So we're hopeful that at the local level, there will be some creativity and some, you know, thought about how do we meet these unique challenges for the children in this particular district. And I mean that for every district. That conversation is going to have to be had. And there's, you know, it's not going to be one uniform, one-size-fits-all solution. That's part of our challenge, but also, I think, part of the opportunity in front of us.
Thank you. And we know that the governor's time is limited, but one last question for you, Governor, from AFC Michigan member Susan Bloom. Susan, you are live now if you'd ask your question.
Yes, hello, Governor. Thank you for having this meeting with us. My question is about the school bus drivers. Will they be getting paid as well, and are they seen as school employees?
Emily, can you help me with this one?
Yeah, that depends on how their contracts are structured. So if they, it'll mostly be a local decision, but what we say in the executive order is that all school employees will be paid, and they may be redeployed to other services that, you know, the governor was talking about, the creativity involved in offering alternative modes of learning. So this is all subject to the collective bargaining agreement. But I guess in short, yes, all school employees will be paid, including bus drivers, and they may be deployed to do other meaningful work during this time.
Thank you very much.
All right. Just want to let folks know that we thank Governor Whitmer so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it. I want you to know how proud and grateful we all are that you are the person leading Michigan residents through this crisis right now. We do have more questions, and we'll stay on the line with our union leaders and representatives from the governor's policy team to answer as many questions as we can. Governor Whitmer's policy director, who was speaking, is Emily Laidlaw. She's been a longtime advocate for pre-K through 12 public education. We're also joined by policy advisor Brandi Johnson, who is instrumental in working through this executive order. And she's been a champion for improving access and affordability of higher ed for Michigan students. Both of these brilliant women have been working around the clock to address the impact of this crisis and are great friends of our union. So if you have questions, please press *3. And I'm going to turn over our next question to Samantha Sajak from Macomb Intermediate School District.
Do I
have to remember?
Oh, yep.
Sorry.
Julie, real quick before I leave, can I just say one last thing? I'm leaving you in good hands with these phenomenal policy folks that I have. Emily Laidlaw is the director. But before I leave, I did want to say this. You know, each of these decisions we've made weigh heavily on us. We debate them thoroughly. We include stakeholders and value the counsel that your union leadership has shared. Counsel from people on the front line is truly important as we're navigating this. COVID-19 remains a serious threat to everyone in our state. And I would be remiss if I didn't just repeat one more time, you know, this is a incredibly contagious, deadly virus for which there's no cure and there's no vaccine. We continue to see our numbers climb, and today's number will be higher than yesterday's number, and we anticipate that will be the story again tomorrow. Every one of us is going to get touched by COVID-19 one way or another, whether it's a loved one who gets sick or sadly maybe doesn't survive their bout with COVID-19, and that's why in this era where there's not enough personal protection equipment for our nurses and doctors and respiratory therapists, the best tool we have is distancing. One scientist said if we could all freeze in place for 14 days, this would come sputtering to a halt. It's the precautions that I urge you to take if you must be out and about to protect yourself and to protect your loved ones. I shared a story about a special education teacher, not in Michigan, but was on the news this morning, the national news, and he passed away. His wife had had COVID-19 and just had a little fever, and it was not a big impact to her. This teacher contracted it and passed away 3 days later. We're all going to respond differently to this virus, and that's why we all have to act as though we're currently carrying it and really abide by the CDC recommendations and the orders that have been issued. Thank you for the work that you do on behalf of our children. We need every one of you to be healthy and to stay healthy so that we can meet the needs of our kids, and I'm incredibly inspired by the work that you do and grateful. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you, Governor.
All right. And again, Emily and Brandy are here to answer our questions. Samantha Sazak from Macomb Intermediate School District has a question about special education services. Samantha?
Hi. Hi, yes. It was seen under, you know, the AFT release some of the main components of the executive order, and one of them listed that, you know, districts will need to provide compensatory services to students with special needs when the emergency is lifted. Does this mean that we're going to have to make up all the minutes missed? I know I'm a speech therapist, and we're already spread them, so I can't see how that might be feasible to do that, and I wasn't sure what the thought was around this.
Brandy, did you want to take this one since you worked on that piece?
Sure. So not necessarily. Those decisions will be made on a case-by-case basis. The executive order indicates that districts should be prepared to provide compensatory services to students. Not that necessarily all services will have to be made up. That will be decision that is made once the state of emergency has been lifted. The executive order directs school districts to comply with all U.S. Department of Education and MVE guidance on issues related to special education.
Excellent. Thank you. And our next question comes from Sally Pierce. It's about higher education. Sally, you're live.
Thank you. I want to thank our unions and the governor's office for holding this meeting. And I'm from Lansing Community College. My question is, what are the plans to help college students in the fall?
Sure. So the Executive Order 2020-35 does not specifically address higher education, but I'm working very closely with all 15 public university presidents and chancellors, the 28 community college presidents, and the roughly 25 independent colleges to start having those conversations. I talk to them almost on a daily basis and are encouraging them to start putting out communication both to incoming students who are folks that will be enrolling in their institutions in the fall, as well as current college students. The Federal CARES Act, which is the federal stimulus package, does have some dollars to support both institutions and students. We're still wrapping our heads around everything that's in that very federal, that very, very complicated federal package, but there will be supports related to both higher ed at the institutional level and at the student level. Institutions are well aware that they are going to need to provide additional support to students in the fall, and they're starting to make those plans. And I think they'll start individually communicating those out very soon. Our institutions are autonomous from the state largely and from each other, so each institution will have to create their own plan for how they'll serve students.
Thank you so much. And our next question comes from Tammy Jessup. Tammy, you're live.
Yes, my question is, I'm getting very close to retirement, and I'm wondering, will I not be credited for the time that I've missed in the school year?
You will be credited. So exposure will not affect the accrual of service credits, nor will it affect contributions for the MSERV program.
Excellent. And our next question is from Ellen Reed. Ellen?
Hi. I'm just wondering, are we still going to continue with the meal delivery programs that we have set up in our district?
Sure, yes. So we added either continuing to offer the meal delivery service or working with another entity such as Food Bank or others to provide meals for those students who qualify as part of the continuity of learning plan in the executive order.
Wonderful. And our next question from Jan Zabrati. Jan, would you ask your question, please?
Yes, what's going to happen with the career tech students who are in programs that require hours to graduate, such as cosmetology?
Do you want me to answer that, Emily?
Yeah, since you wrote that piece.
Great. So the executive order indicates that that school districts need to do impose a best faith effort, do everything practicable to be able to help students finish their CTE classes from at a distance. That also includes dual enrollment classes. We recognize that there are things that will not be possible related to CTE because it is such a hands-on mode of delivering instruction and receiving learning. Some of the certifications related to CTE are national in nature or outside the control of the Michigan Department of Education. They're industry-recognized credentials. So the executive order can't automatically allow for completion of those certifications. We are working with MDE and the Office of Career Technical Education to offer some additional guidance and support to help students meet the hours that they can at a distance, but we'll recognize that we're going to have to work for the national accrediting agencies and the industries that provide the credentials on how we can go about ensuring students receive those credentials. We'll also make sure to request some flexibility with the U.S. Department of Education as it relates to completer status for those CTE students.
Excellent. And our next question comes from Ann Delmont. Ann, you're live.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking the time to answer our questions. I am a regular education teacher in the Harper Creek Community School District, and my husband teaches in Marshall Public Schools. We understand that in the executive order that each district has to submit a plan for approval for the continuation of student learning. Can either of you elaborate on the timeline for that plan as far as how it gets approved and who is actually ultimately responsible for approving that plan?
Yep, sure. So tomorrow, the Michigan Department of Education will send out a standard template for this continuity of learning plan. And schools over the next few days will partner with their districts, teachers, and ISDs to come up with a plan that they'll submit to their ISD or a charter school would submit to their authorizer. The plan will be approved by the ISD and sent to the state, and then it's a local approval, and it'll automatically trigger approval from the state level, which will allow state aid to continue flowing. That's how that works. The EO says that the learning plan must be up and running by April 27th.
All
All right. And our next question, I'm sorry, did you have something else to add? Okay. Our next question comes from Megan Ciatella from NEA Local 1. Megan, you're live?
Okay, hi. This is Megan Ciatella. First of all, I want to say on behalf of all Michiganders, thank you to the Governor Whitmer's office and Governor Whitmer herself for being so proactive in considering all of our health, mental, physical well-being of all Michiganders, students, and teachers alike. So thank you so much for your leadership. My first question is, I have a question regarding the executive order action that states where districts and administrators are allowed to have individuals to come back into the building. However, our question is concerning those public educators that have compromised immune systems. Will they and or should they be required to report in this instance, given Whitmer's stay home, stay safe policy in place?
This is Emily, and I think if the governor were on, she would echo the social distancing and other public health directives that she has already issued. And, what we put in the EO is directly from the federal government CISO list, which is what are the essential employees. And it says that you can return to a school building to facilitate distance learning or learning from a distance. But we also added language to say that public health and safety need to be of a top concern.
Excellent. And next question comes from Gina Rossi Miller. Gina, you're live?
Yes. First, I'd like to thank everyone for the wonderful questions. I would like to thank the governor for doing this, especially in a time like this. My question is, I am the caretaker now. I am a retired teacher and the caretaker of a 4-year-old and 5-year-old who have been in Head Start, and I was wondering if there are any accommodations that have been made for Head Start students. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Emily or Brandy, questions about Head Start students?
Yes, are there going to be any computer accommodations made for Head Start students? Like activities that parents can do at home?
Yep. So the order that we put out today is for K through 12. However, the Lieutenant Governor has been working to draw up a list of companies and other ways that districts and, possibly Head Start can access digital learning devices for students. So that's something that we're working on right now and will become available in the coming days.
Thank you so much. Next question comes from Beverly Stevenson. Beverly?
Yes, thank you. Thanks to all of you for everything that you're working on. We really appreciate it. My question is about summer school. I am a special education teacher in an SXI program, and our students attend summer school to meet the requirements of their program. Is there any guidance on that?
There's no specific guidance on summer school, but what the executive order does is allow for flexibility with the school calendar, allowing for a balanced calendar for the rest of this year and or next year, and then allowing for year-round school as well. So there is flexibility in how you deliver education, including the time frame in which you deliver it. So I think summer school is, of course, still an option, and will be decided at the local level. We tried to build in as much flexibility for local districts to work with their unions to figure out what the best plan for students and parents moving forward.
Excellent. And I think I'm going to have this last question for Emily and Brandy, but I know that they have to get to work on
many, many other policy issues that the state is facing right now. So with this last question for Emily and Brandy, and then we've got a number of questions in here that are very specific that I think could be handled best by our union president. So stay tuned for that. So first, Mark Carlson, why don't you ask your question?
Hi. Thanks for all your help. My question is, as I'm reading articles and hearing from different sides, is Governor Whitmer's executive order, is he the final end-all say, or is there any legislative action that needs to still be taken to kind of cement all this and put it into place?
So we worked cooperatively with the legislature to create this plan. They don't need to do anything for this executive order to become active. Her signature is what it took. We expect that there will be considerations for the fall that the legislature will want to be involved in. And so we are planning on continuing to work collaboratively with them. But for right now, the EO is active and everything in it is what schools should be looking at to finish the school year.
Thank you so much, Emily and Brandy. Any last words that you'd like to share with us? All right.
Sorry, I was on mute. I just wanted to say thank you so much. All of your organizations have been instrumental in providing feedback for this executive order. As one reporter described it, it is a thick document, which, you know, is intended to allow you to do what you do best, which is teach children and support families during their educational experience. We really appreciate your partnership, and we're looking forward to working together as we implement this EO and then as we make other decisions as this public health emergency hopefully, you know, gets better soon. So thank you so much for everyone on this call. We really appreciate all of you.
Thank you, and thank you to the organizations that allowed us the opportunity to share with you. Much appreciation.
Thanks, guys. All right. Jennifer Hood is an AFSCME member and a custodian with a question that I think our presidents would be best able to answer. So, Jennifer, why don't you ask your question?
Yeah, I had read earlier when they had announced that schools were closing for the year that teachers would be allowed to go in buildings to get stuff or to do online classes. My question is, we just worked 2 weeks to disinfect those buildings. Wouldn't they be bringing the virus in if they are carrying it or whatnot, and then the buildings would be contaminated and we'd have to go back and disinfect them all over again?
This is Larry Wohlrig from AFSCME. At the risk of sounding too much like a medical expert, sister, what we do and what part of the intent here is to consistently clean and provide the services for the facilities for those who must go in there. And that will be part of what our understanding is in making sure that everybody continues to get paid during this process.
Thanks, President Roerig, and thank you, Jennifer. Our next question comes from Talise Ivy. Talise, you are live.
Hi, thank you. My question, I'm a high school teacher, and my question is more on the social-emotional aspect for staff and students. And just wondering if there's anything forward-thinking that training will be available for us as teachers, because we all know that our social workers are overwhelmed with all the duties that they have to comply with, on being able to recognize and support our students through this trauma that has happened and be able to provide and direct support in that way, if there's any thought on how that we can do that before we re-enter the classroom.
Hi, Talise. This is Paula Herbart, the president of the NEA. I want you to know currently
MDE, MASSP, MASA, we have all thought, and AST Michigan and MEA have thought about this, and there are modules available right now that you can access about social emotional needs and learning, and so that you can help yourself know the signs and deal with adverse childhood experiences, recognizing signs and symptoms, and also things for secondary trauma, which you as a classroom educator are going to experience as well. And so go to the Michigan Department of Ed site and look for those links. Your MEA has links, and I believe that AST Michigan also has links to provide support for educators. So please feel free to access all of those sites to look for those modules, which will help you in exactly what you're looking for. I appreciate it. We are going to be dealing with a lot of that trauma and secondary trauma as educators, and we need to do everything we can in anticipation of those needs while we're in this process. So thank you.
All right. Our next question comes from Patricia Campbell. She's an AST Detroit member. Patricia, you're live.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, I asked my question a few minutes ago. I wanted to know, I'm a 10-month employee who relies on summer school. Will I be able to file unemployment?
So this is David Hecker, president of AFT Michigan. So as you know, as everyone on the line knows, school employees usually are not eligible for unemployment compensation in the summer. This is a question that has come up that we're exploring with the governor's Department of Labor to see if anything will be different this summer, especially as you said, for people like yourself who rely and regularly teach or work at a summer school program.
And I just want to note that there's a lot of questions related to unemployment insurance for folks who are not receiving pay or who might not be receiving pay in the future. We're working on getting additional answers, but there's a lot of information on our website, on the MEA website, on Ask Me's, where you can find some information about those programs. And we know that more will be coming out from the state and the federal government in the coming days. The next question we have is from George, an MEA retired member from Battle Creek. George, you're live?
Yes, I just wondered, I was hoping I could ask the governor why we don't just go till the end of April, then look for another extension beyond that rather than the blanket 70 days, which puts us clear into June.
You know, this is David Hecker. I think the governor's thinking is, you know, the advice from CDC a week ago was for people not to gather together in groups of any size, you know, through the end of May. And that's what they issued a week ago. So I think the governor was looking at the CDC recommendations that people do not gather together for a while, and that so the other thing I think the governor considered was the certainty that people need. People need to know what's going to happen. They may not like what's going to happen, but they need to know what's going to happen. So a combination of the CDC advice, strong advice, and they're the experts, plus providing people with certainty, I think are two of the reasons behind the governor's thinking to take this through the end of the school year.
All right, and then the next question is from Pamela Coons. She's a food service member, worker and an MEA member, and also a public school parent. So, Pamela?
There, thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, now, if the board or the school district says that a student is okay to go to the next level, if the parent wants to keep their student back, are they allowed to? And then is that going to affect the kindergartners coming in
will that make a strain on the school buildings that we do only have so much room in each school? Thank you.
Hey, this is Paula Herbart, President of the MEA. I think that the key indication in the executive order is that these are locally driven plans. And so local school districts will make the decision about retention or promotion. And I think that, as always, families can request that a child be kept in a grade with consulting with the education, the classroom educator and the principal, et cetera, under the guidelines of the school district and their board policy. So that won't change. But remember that these plans going forward, as far as putting a crunch on our kindergartners and the kindergarten classrooms, again, locally driven plans moving forward is key, because each school district and the community understands their district better than anybody else. And I would recommend that you voice your concerns locally to your superintendent and or a school district principal. Write them a letter just making the suggestion and asking what you as a family can do to secure the best learning environment for your students.
Excellent. And our next question is from Lisa Sutton. Lisa, you're live.
Hi. My question is, I'm wondering, can the district, local district, can they require, and then admin, can they require teachers to come back into the building? Is it a requirement?
Hi, this is Paula Solano, Herbart, sorry. I thought I was single again. Don't tell my husband. One of the things that I think that you need to remember is if you're directed to do something by your immediate supervisor, you need to report. But if, in fact, you have compromised immune system, if you feel unsafe and secure, you need to communicate that with your administrator and talk to them. There is a need for you to report if asked to report. We don't want you to think that that isn't part of it. David?
Yeah, no, sure. No, Paul is absolutely right. The one thing I would add to it is if you're told to come back and for whatever reason, your age, if you're in my age group, or if you have compromised health issues, you should raise that, as Paula said. Let me also suggest that you let your union president, your UNISERV director, your staff representative who works with your local union know that as well, in case any issue comes up as a result of it. They can help you deal with the administration.
This is Larry Rollring. Just to dovetail, for all employees, that applies. That the harm's way and the other conditions that apply have been explained in great detail, and your president or steward and your staff representative, and I'm speaking in conjunction with my other two union heads here, that we all feel the same way about this, that there are still protections that should be afforded and explored.
Excellent. And our next question is from Jeff Whittle, paraprofessional from Macomb County. Jeff?
Hi, everybody, and really big thanks to everybody, the governor's office, all the unions. You guys are doing yeoman's work here, and it is greatly appreciated by all of your membership. So thank you guys very much. So just to tie back to what you guys were just talking about, there might be also issues with child care for a lot of our members that used a family member to watch the son or daughter while they were at work. So that might be another issue that they would want to get with their union with and help work out with the administration, because they might not have anybody to watch their child while they're asked to go into the building. But my paramount question is, our district, Macomb Intermediate, we go year-round. Is there a chance, or is there any kind of directive for summer education, like such as like after 4th of July? Would there be an ask to maybe resume schools coming back then? And then just a request, as a paraprofessional, the messaging that is going out to a lot of people, and I've talked to a lot of paras, already a marginalized group in education, we're feeling even more marginalized because all we're hearing is teachers, and I'm not taking anything away from what the teachers and the administration and management are doing, but many, many, many support staff and paraprofessionals are showing up and doing this work, and it is totally getting lost in any kind of messaging to the public and to the parents. So I don't mean that to sound any kind of negative way, but it's just how many of us feel right now.
Jeff, this is David. Thank you for everything you do. Some great points. Just on the last point, AFSCME, I know, represents support staff, so frequently talks about support staff. And AFT mission, as you know, Jeff, was thanks in large part to your leadership and the leadership of others and the MEA, try to always make it a point to talk about all school employees, teachers, support staff. You know, we've always said you could have the greatest teacher in the world. If the bus driver doesn't get the child to the class, no one can take advantage of the great talent of that teacher. Or if the building isn't clean, or the kids aren't getting fed. So there's great respect. I will admit that when you get outside of us, us being the three of us, the three unions here, that sometimes elected officials fall easily into saying teachers. When they should go broader than that, and I know all the unions on the line here try to make that point to elected officials and others that we're not just talking about teachers. As far as the summer goes, Jeff, so you know the distinction you have if you have a 12-month program and you always work 12 months, right? So the governor will judge, I assume, sometime in June as to where we are with the crisis, as to whether or not she thinks regular in-class education could start again in the summer. So, you know, I think we're given this crisis, we're too far away from making that decision at this point.
This is Larry Roehrig. David wonderfully said on behalf of Paul and myself and all, this entire process is a team approach. The T is for teachers. The E is for educational support personnel. The A is for the administrative personnel. And the M is for the members of the community and our unions. And together, we make the team that will make this thing doable. So we try not to forget anybody in the structure. And as you said, my brother, the elected officials must be held accountable and constantly reminded by those of us who believe in the strength and unity of the entire workforce, no matter what union you belong to.
All right. Now, it is just a few minutes before 2:30 when we were supposed to end our call, but we do have more than 100 questions in the queue, many of which are in similar themes. The information is available on our website, and if it's not available or hasn't been addressed, we will be doing our best to reach out to all of you with answers. But I do want to have our last question come from Cheryl Ninehouse. Cheryl is a Lakeview Public School counselor and has a really important question I think that we all could use an answer to right now.
Hello?
Yep, Cheryl, go ahead.
Okay. As a school counselor, I'm concerned about the frontline workers that are working with the COVID patients and being traumatized and stressed and concerned for their own safety and the safety of their families, and then coming back home and having to parent and to school those kids and what's going to be happening in those homes. Do you know if there's any type of resources that are being set up for the frontline workers on site that they can have their own type of counseling or what have you before coming home to their families?
Cheryl,
This is David. That's a tremendous point, first of all, extremely important. I really do not know the answer to that as far as healthcare workers, police, firefighters, grocery workers, educators. I don't know if those various facilities are offering that kind of assistance, but it's extremely important. And as far as education workers go, again, it's something on the local level that our locals should be discussing with the administration to see if it can be provided.
Thank you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. This is Paula. I was going to say this. I was going to echo what David said. Having brought it up to us, we will certainly advocate for that as we have conversations with the governor's office and the legislature. I mean, it's really important that you say that. One of the things we also want to keep in mind as you're developing these plans with your local school district is to make them reasonable. It is not reasonable to think that our education professionals who are teaching in the classroom will be teaching from 9 to 3:30 or 8 to 2:30. Or this is a reasonable amount of education, age appropriate, understanding that families have multiple children and maybe only one or two devices. This is about if you're a kindergarten or first grade or second grade, that you should have maybe 1 to 2 hours of instructional or work to do a day. If you're a third or fourth grader, it might be 3 hours. If you're a high school, it might be 3 to 4 hours. Understanding that it's going to happen all day long, but educators are going to provide the resources and the lessons that maybe are housed in one area and students access them when they can, or they get onto a Zoom meeting once a week. Whatever that is, that it's measured and reasonable for this chaotic time. As someone said earlier, this is not really online learning. This is not really true distance learning. And this is not face-to-face learning. This is COVID-19 learning and education. And we need to be really cognizant of that these plans need to be appropriate for the times we're living in, which means understanding the stress of the family.
Thank you so much, and thank you for all of the meetings that you guys have been participating in and hosting. They've been extremely helpful, and I really appreciate you.
All right. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for questions, but for those of you still in the queue, we do have a record of your questions, and if they want to address on the call, we will have someone get in touch with you. I also encourage everyone to check out the websites on all of our union's websites where we have information available for you, as well as the michigan.gov/coronavirus site. But President Lorig?
Thank you, Julie. And thank you to our Ask Me Council 25 members for joining us on this call today. The work you do to support our schools, as I said earlier, and to provide meals to the children and to sanitize the buildings and equipment is so vitally important now more than ever. We appreciate Michigan Governor Whitmer's efforts to do right by our members, all our members who work in public education, and we will continue to advocate on behalf of union members, both at the state and local level, and many of us are able to advocate at the federal level. Please stay tuned for further communication individually from AFSCME Council 25 and AFSCME International. I'd like to turn it over now to my brother and fellow warrior in this campaign against this terrible situation, Brother Dave Hecker, President of AFT Michigan. Brother?
Thank you, Larry, and thank you to my AFT Michigan sisters and brothers and all of you from our two union partners for joining the call today and to the incredible work you do each and every day. We still have many challenges ahead, obviously, but we know what needs to be done, and there's no one better than you to do it. We again appreciate that we have a governor and a governor's team that values the input of school employees. We're going to keep you informed and updated throughout this ordeal. Visit aftmichigan.org to find resources and information on the coronavirus and to sign up for our email list. Paula, I'll hand it over to you to wrap up.
Thank you. Thank you, David, and thank you, Larry. Let me just add, I would like to thank all of you for joining us this afternoon. To the MEA members across the state, let me say that it is my greatest honor to serve you as your president. I am proud to advocate for you, for our students, and for all of public education. Governor Whitmer has ensured that our local unions have a voice in this process moving forward, and now we have the responsibility to raise our voices for what our students and our colleagues need. Together, we will be champions for education. MEA will continue to keep our members updated through email and on our website, mea.org. Thank you again for joining us, and have a great day. Be safe, stay healthy.
All right, we'll also be providing a recording.